Sure, there's a lot of potential, especially in the CBD markets. People are talking about big, big money. But with that reward is an enormous risk. And my fear is that people are going to kind of blindly jump into this thing. And if it all works out, that's great. But if it doesn't, it's going to leave like a major financial hole in some operations.
That's Josh Leidecker from Susquehanna Mills. They're an oilseed processor up in Lycoming County, where they've been growing hemp for the past couple of years and processing the seeds into oil. We're going to talk to Josh today, and he's got a really unique perspective on the world, on agriculture, on industrial hemp. We'll get to that in a minute, but first I want to bring you up to speed on this past week in industrial hemp, at least from my perspective. Okay, so last weekend, Dr. Steve Groff of the Hemp Train fame, that's the guy who's opening up a processing plant with his family in Red Lion, York County, he sent me this article from a Penn State news site titled "Cannabinoid Compounds May Inhibit Growth of Colon Cancer." And apparently the compounds that are effective on cancer cells are not THC or CBD. Okay, so Dr. Kent Vrana, he's the chair of the pharmacological department at Penn State, he says, "Now that we've identified the compounds that we think have this activity, we can take these compounds and start trying to alter them to make them more potent against cancer cells." Okay, so this could be big news or should be big news. A cannabinoid or an entourage of cannabinoids seem to inhibit the growth of colon cancer cells in the lab. Sure, I've heard rumors about these cancer-fighting effects, but here is a team of researchers publishing about it. I'm going to be talking to Dr. Vrana next week. So email me if you have questions that you think I should ask him. Okay, you can send them to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. Okay, so in that same email from Dr. Groff, he also invited me to a Pennsylvania hemp farmer's supper that he and his family were hosting at their Dallas town restaurant, Windridge Farm. I was a fly on the wall. The place was packed, and I only barely managed to get a seat. There was easily 150 people there, probably more. And there was a nice buffet with roast beef and asparagus. And after people ate, Steve Groff got up and he told his story of growing up on a dairy farm, going to college, becoming a surgeon, then having a nearly fatal bicycling accident that changed the course of his life. And then with his family, he developed a very successful restaurant and event space with craft beer and cider. And now the family is getting into industrial hemp. They've started a company called Groff North America. And then Dr. Groff's son, Taylor, got up and he explained that whole business. And then we heard from their chief operating officer, Paul Bleimeyer, and he got up and he talked about all the products that you can make out of hemp, not just CBD, but out of the fiber and out of the microfibers. Then Ryan Dome, he's the chief development officer, he got up and he sort of explained what the deal is for farmers, like actually talked about numbers and prices. And you know that I'm fascinated by the birth of this industry, you know, that we're watching it in real time. And again, here was one of those moments.
It was really important for us to not only have an informative event.
This is Taylor Groff talking by phone this morning.
To also, you know, provide a essentially, a, you know, an economic reason behind it too, and really focusing on, hey, folks, if you want to grow industrial hemp, or high CBD hemp for that matter, you know, we're going to have an outlet for that. And I think that was probably one of the first opportunities that we've heard of, you know, in this local setting that we were able to bring a value proposition. And I think that's really what is pushing, you know, some farmers kind of over the fence and looking at planting hemp in 2019.
Their goal is to contract 1,500 acres of hemp.
We have had a ton of follow-up from a number of different farmers. We are finalizing our contract right now and plan to sign the first several on Friday. So I think at this point, we have upwards of 800 acres already pretty well locked down, and we anticipate getting to that 1,500 number pretty quickly. So
just to recap what the Hemp Train technology is, it's a whole plant processing machine that takes care of the stalks, the biofiber, and the microfibers. So it opens up hemp growing to a whole lot of different varieties, not just CBD. But speaking of CBD, here's something that's happening tomorrow, March 28th, in Lancaster County. Do you remember Floyds of Leadville? He was on the show a couple weeks ago. Well, they are having a hemp farmers meeting tomorrow at Shady Maple. Do you know where Shady Maple is out there in, what's that, East Earl? So they say, we will have company members and our farmers on hand to answer your questions about access to our proprietary seed, contract details, and an outline for successful hemp farming in Pennsylvania. When Floyd and Jake were on the podcast a few months ago, they talked about setting up a meeting like this, and it's great to see it happening. Okay, so the other thing that's going on is with Canopy Growth. Remember them? They are the Canadian cannabis company that owns the brand Tweed, and who announced this past January that they're going to invest a bunch of money into a hemp industrial park somewhere in the southern tier of New York State. And do you remember Jeff Whaling? He's from the National Hemp Council, and he has a vision for Pennsylvania as an epicenter of hemp production, specifically Berks, Lehigh, and Lancaster counties. Well, he sent me a press release last Thursday announcing that his company, AgriNext USA, was just acquired by Canopy Growth. The United States is the next stop on Canopy Growth's desired path to becoming a leading revenue-generating company focused on all aspects of cannabinoids and their potential, says Bruce Linton, co-CEO and chairman of Canopy Growth. Okay, so I interviewed Jeff Whaling last summer. He was actually the very first interview I ever conducted for this podcast. We sat in his horse barn in Berks County and talked about industrial hemp. I learned so much that day. It was like a three-hour interview. And he laid out this vision of the market, the potential market, just how huge hemp can be.
I truly believe that we will be able to develop a company like Koch, K-O-C-H, Industries. If you look, they own Georgia-Pacific, they own Scott's Paper, they own food companies, they own fashion design companies. They're a $42 billion company. I think that, you know, if we really look at this, we can compete head-to-head with them using a completely 100% sustainable crop.
Boom. There you go. That's what Jeff Whaling is up to. Building an empire, or should I say a hempire.
Industrial hemp.
I asked Taylor Groff what he thought of Canopy Growth's move into the U.S. market.
You know, I think it's definitely an interesting play on their behalf. They're definitely taking a pretty large approach, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. I think at the end of the day, local ties are going to be important. You know, as we talk to the farming community, an event like we had last week, I think, you know, the authenticity is important. It truly does start with the farmer. I mean, without the farming community, you know, we can't get to thousands of acres. And I think it's an interesting approach from their end, and we'll see how things shake out in the future.
Yeah, here's to the future. But for now, let's get back to the present. Here's my interview with Josh Lidecker from Susquehanna Mills. Josh Lidecker, welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give us a little bit of an introduction? Who are you? Where did you come from? What are you up to?
Sure. My name's Josh. I'm from Susquehanna Mills in Montoursville, Pennsylvania. We've now moved to Muncie, Pennsylvania. We are an oil seed processor. We typically make canola oil and sunflower oil. And I originally became interested in hemp as another oilseed crop that our Pennsylvania farmers can grow. And potentially we can produce another culinary oil product out of it.
Okay, making culinary oils out of canola, sunflower, and now hemp.
Mainly canola is probably 95% of what we do. We have started to develop some markets around our sunflower oil, which is delicious, but it's typically been a little more expensive in the past, so we're trying to build some more markets around there. And then, of course, hemp seed was interesting to me, so we grew some hemp seed. We were encouraged by that production, and we processed it, we crushed it, and made several products from it, and then found some markets for those products.
So tell us about those products.
Well, obviously, the one product would be the oil. So we produced a cold press, expeller pressed, kind of a raw, you know, unrefined hemp oil that we packed into a retail container. We got a couple of supermarkets to carry our oil, a couple of specialty shops. We didn't have a tremendous amount of oil to go around, but we developed markets around that. We also packed it in 1 gallon containers, and we've got a couple of restaurants down in Baltimore and Washington that like using that for like a bread service, especially if somebody has a some sort of dairy allergy and they can't use butter for their bread. You know, you can put the hemp oil down and it can dip their bread into the hemp oil.
So not a cooking oil?
Well, kind of. Yeah, it's more of a finishing oil, like a salad dressing oil. It's got a lot of chlorophyll in the oil. So just like good olive oil, you can't go too high on the temperatures that you cook with it, or else the chlorophyll will burn and smoke a little bit. So you can do some light pan frying with hemp oil. I've actually made popcorn with hemp oil. So lots of different markets, and also as an ingredient. I mean, where any oil is used in an ingredient in a baked goods or in some other part of cooking, you know, hemp oil can be introduced and that flavor profile kind of accent what's being made there. So that's the oil side. The meal, so then part of after the extraction, we also have a meal. And right now, hemp meal is not an approved feed ingredient in the United States. It is a feed ingredient in Canada, I think. But there are lots of people that have interest in feeding hemp meal to their livestock. There are a couple other permit holders that are utilizing this as part of their research in finishing some beef cattle. I met a gentleman the other night that's interested in finishing his bison on hemp protein. And I'm working on a project with a company in Lancaster that's wanting to develop an egg, a hemp fortified omega-3 egg, which is pretty exciting, you know, for that sort of thing. And beyond that, we also produced a hemp protein flour from it. The first year I only made about 500 pounds, but I was amazed on how many bakeries and people that were making other things that wanted to include hemp protein as part of one of the ingredients really latched on to that. And this year we decided to grind most of our hemp meal into flour. We produced about 8,000 pounds of hemp flour, and I've merchandised about 3/4 of that already. It was just finished yesterday, so kind of interesting.
Is hemp flour gluten-free?
It is if it's produced. I had it ground in a flour mill, so we had to put a disclaimer that it was processed in a plant that does process wheat. But if this develops like I hope it would, we would add that equipment to our facility and process it by itself, which then would be a gluten-free product. But yes, hemp flour by itself is a gluten-free product, yeah.
So last summer, I saw you give a presentation at the Penn State Field Day at the Landisville Research Farm, and you said your first year of hemp, you started pretty small with, what, 4 acres?
Well, the first permit, the first year that we grew industrial hemp, we were only allowed to grow 5 acres total.
Oh, right.
That was part of the research permit, and we opted to put that on organic ground, hoping to kind of capitalize on a little bit higher value products coming out being organic. Yeah, just 5 acres the first year.
Oh, okay.
But I was very encouraged by the work that we had done, and we did ramp up quite a bit last year. We planted about 35 acres last year. Unfortunately, nothing grew well in Pennsylvania, or at least in our area, our part of Pennsylvania last year.
And had a bit of rain last
all
year.
All of that excess water really kind of made our hemp crop pretty much fail. Yep.
So what kind of yields do you get from your hemp crop?
I got to revert back to the first year. And again, I was very encouraged. So we got about 1,100 pounds of grain per acre off the first cutting. Certainly some challenges with cutting. You know, the moisture content is generally pretty high, so you have to be prepared to properly dry that crop. We weren't prepared the first year, so the first time we cut about an acre, way too wet. We weren't able to dry it, and we ended up having some of it mold. So by the time we got around to cutting the last 4 acres, we were prepared. We put a drying floor in a grain truck, and we were able to dry it down on the second cutting, which was about 3 weeks later. than when we took the first cutting. But we got about 1,100 pounds of grain per acre. And then part of our research was developing all of the products, you know, trying to develop markets for all the products of the hemp. So we also came back through after we had taken the grain harvest off, and we ran a disbine through and cut the remaining hemp down to the ground. We tedded it around, made sure it was good and dry, and then we put it in big square bales, which was pretty exciting. It didn't look like anything laying on the ground, but we ended up getting about 2,000 pounds per acre of hemp fiber off of that same sort of deal.
Yeah, right.
So there was like, that was probably best case scenario. We planted a dual purpose crop. We got a grain yield, and we also got a fiber yield off that first year, which was pretty neat.
So you run a harvester in to get the seeds and then come back later with a disc bind to get the stalks.
That's correct. Yep. So the grain portion is up high. So the hemp plant, this particular variety, grew about between 5 and 7 feet. So we had the header on the combine all the way up and just tried to nip off the tops to get the grain portion, and still had, you know, 2-3 feet of stock below that. And that's why we disbind it down. And that's how we made it.
So I was talking to Jeff Graybill. He's a Penn State Extension guy. We were talking about, you know, hemp seed as livestock feed, and he was concerned about yields. And, you know, he was thinking about what they grew over there at the, you know, the research farm in Lancaster County. And he thought it just didn't compare yield wise to like a soybean. But I remember seeing those plants and they were small. I imagine you're growing a different variety and had a different sort of success rate on yields?
No, they had I think they had some planting issues on that farm. Yeah, I think they would admit to you they did not have the most ideal conditions, especially last year. But if you look at what Penn State did the previous year, work that Greg Roth had done,
right,
actually showed some pretty promising yields from several varieties. Except part of their research was actually more a nitrogen trial. So where they did see some good results was where they had a higher nitrogen, you know, application in those fields. The research that was done last year in Landisville was more a pre-emergence herbicide trial.
Oh, okay.
That in combination with some heavy soils and then that rain, they had some crusting issues, had some emergence issues. It really clearly, I saw the field, it wasn't the best in the world. And I think there's some room, you know, for that. I mean, I think that last year was just a terrible example of farming in Pennsylvania, especially on a crop that we don't have a lot of experience with.
What are you doing this year to prep your fields?
We're going to do some very, very light, minimal tillage in our fields. We like to use chicken litter up this way for a majority of our nutritional needs. So we'll spread chicken litter, maybe some lime if we need to. I think most of our fields in pretty good shape. Run through with a minimal till disc. Let that kind of settle down a little bit, maybe hopefully get rained on a couple of times, and then we're going to be no-till. I mean, it's minimal till, so it's a little bit of tillage, but we'll be running through there with a no-till planter on some of the ground on 15-inch centers, and some of the other ground we're going to be using a no-till drill to put in. So it'll be a couple weeks after the tillage pass. It'll be soft, but it will still be, you know, basically a no-till application. Right. Some of the ground, we're actually going to go right into some soybean stubble. So that will be a completely no-till shot there.
So tell me about this concept of full circle. I see that on your website. That's got to be more than just a marketing idea, right?
Yeah, it's kind of what we based our business on originally when we first got started. We were very involved in biodiesel. And kind of the initial premise of our business model was that we would purchase crops and encourage, you know, local production of oilseed crops here in Pennsylvania, harvest those crops, turn those crops into edible oils, distribute those to universities and restaurants and things like that. Then we would collect the waste oil and put the waste oil back into biodiesel, which ideally would be available to those same growers at a reduced price to be able to harvest or do whatever the next planting would be, but actually turn that that resource that came from their land back into renewable fuel for their use. So there's the circle, you know, essentially coming from the farm through food service, recycled out of food service, back to farm as use in biodiesel.
How much of your desire to do this is tied into sort of thoughts of climate change?
Well, I mean, I'm not an activist by all means, but I'm also not blind. So obviously, I have noticed severe weather changes lately. You know, it just it makes more sense to me. It's more logical, this approach to try to utilize all of the resources that we're given instead of wasting them. So I wouldn't say that I'm driven towards climate change. I just think it makes sense and it's logical if it's done correctly. And, you know, if you follow that sort of model, I think the byproduct of that is reduced emissions and it's better use of resources. You know, it's localizing a system so we don't have massive transportation costs across the world. It's certainly a key component of it, but for me, it's more just logic. You know, this is why produce something halfway across the world and use it, you know, produce something in the Midwest and use it on the East Coast. Why can't we just produce what we need on the East Coast, keep it on the East Coast, recycle those dollars in our local economy? That's kind of where my big push is at. And a byproduct of that is obviously we're pushing a very sustainable model that people that are really looking to add that to their model, a lot of universities, for example, love the fact that we are able to offer this kind of all-in-one, all-inclusive, full sustainability model that allows them, by making a decision to use our oil, you know, obviously has dramatic reduction in fossil fuel consumption.
And do you think we're starting to see a shift in consumer demand?
Yeah, when we started, you know, it just seemed to make sense. And now it's become the thing that people want. So it's clearly, the landscape is changing. And, you know, where when we first started, people, you know, oh, that's cute. We'll support local and blah, blah, blah. And now they're asking for, you know, non-GMO. Are you guys non-GMO? We've always been non-GMO. Not necessarily because I'm anti-GMO. I just think it makes sense to not have another crop that's genetically modified in the field. So again, it was a logical step. Not on some sort of high ground or some sort of position. It just made sense to me that we can manage canola in a different format that would allow us to add value to the overall crop rotation, the overall scope of a farming operation.
You're sort of rooted in common sense.
Yeah, yeah. And as this hemp thing develops, like I'm really inspired, not necessarily by the oil's a tiny part of it. I mean, that's the tool set I had. So it made sense for me to go in that direction. But I really see like fiber is going to be a major part of where we're going. And I think that fiber is going to have the similar impact to our cities and our areas like the lumber industry did, you know, hundreds of years ago. I mean, that same sort of city building strength is going to come from the products that are developed from this incredibly versatile crop. And we've got a couple of projects going on right now. We've got just to try to develop additional markets. We're doing some composite work internally on hemp fiber. Specifically, we're making a shovel handle and an axe handle out of hemp fiber, composite injection molding.
Wow.
Which is kind of neat. And then I'm also involved in a project where we're building a interlocking hempcrete structural block, which is pretty cool. That's made out of the hemp herd.
Right.
And it's kind of an exciting thing. It's got a long way to go with testing and approvals and to make it a, you know, a viable building product. There's quite a bit of investment that's going to take place just in testing and proof of concept. But it's certainly exciting to see a product that's made from a little bit of lime and some plants that were grown in a 100-day time period.
Do you have advice for farmers who are thinking about growing hemp this year?
Yeah, I do. There's a lot of buzz going on right now. And I would encourage people to make very, very conservative decisions on the volume of anything new that they're trying to do. Sure, there's a lot of potential, especially in the CBD markets. People are talking about big, big money. But with that reward is an enormous risk. And my fear is that people are going to kind of blindly jump into this thing. And if it all works out, that's great. But if it doesn't, it's going to leave like a major financial hole in some operations. I see it with a lot of small farmers that are really struggling. And they're looking for this as kind of a saving grace to kind of do this and I'll be okay sort of thing. So I would encourage people to carefully wade into any new crop with the understanding that it may fail and they may not make money right away. And it's still a learning curve. And especially with CBD, I've talked to a bazillion people that want to grow CBD. And my recommendation is do not plant any more than you can afford to lose, because it's a very high probability that something could go wrong. It's farming, you know, that's what it is. And that would be my advice for anybody wanting to get into agriculture. And obviously experience is key. I see a lot of brand new people, brand new faces that are at these meetings that have never farmed anything in their life. And they're excited. And they see opportunity, but they really need to get a team, a network put together that can support them if they're going to do that sort of thing. Just because there's so many things that can go wrong. Like last year, for example, you know, it rained more than we've ever seen. No one can control that. Hemp did not respond well to that much rain. And we did not make any money last year on our hemp crop. So, but we knew that risk going in, and that would be my advice, is just to understand the risk, understand that the reward is, you know, in a relationship with the risk. And those are the things we have to kind of keep an eyeball on.
Getting back to seeds, are you going to be buying seed this year, or did you save a portion of your seeds from last year?
Yeah, and actually under the terms of our research program last year, we were not permitted to keep seeds.
Oh, okay.
They had to be turned back in to the Department of Ag for storage or consumed or destroyed, is how that worked. Now, I think this next year coming forward, I would like to look into trying to develop some specific, you know, this look at producing some seed in our area and see if we can improve, some of these genetics that are coming from Canada. We're going to also try some genetics from down south in Kentucky. They've been doing a lot of breeding down that way. Kind of excited to try a couple different things out. We did try last year, we tried three varieties from two different breeders in Canada. Both good varieties. The one was the one we grew the first year, which I had very good luck with. We had a really good stand. It's just we couldn't harvest it because of all the rain in the fall. So we lost a lot of grain to the ground and kind of got out there about a month later than we should have to harvest it. And most of the grain was gone by that point. But yeah, we will be buying seed this year, probably mostly from Canada.
Any trouble with pests?
No, we didn't really see any major pest damage. Of course, we had Japanese beetles on the plants, but they really didn't cause a whole lot of issue there. I'm not a bug guy. I don't really know the issue, but we didn't see anything major that was going to cause a financial, you know, drain on the crop.
And you're all organic, or you have two separate operations there?
I am a organic processor at Susquehanna Mills. My farming operation is conventional. I'm not an organic farmer. 95% of what we do is non-GMO. 5% is the organic processing. And if last year we had zero organic grain come in. So we didn't do any organic processing at all last year. We hope that this year we have some better luck, our growers have better luck producing crop.
Yeah, right. Let's hope it's a much better year.
We're about due one. I think we're due a good year.
So for people who want to learn more about your company and products, what should they do?
Go to SusquehannaMills.com if you'd like to try our oil or some of our products. Or we have a sister company that is SusquehannaHempCo.com where we sell a lot of our hemp products that we're developing. We have a couple of CBD products. We have some hemp flour. We can sell our hemp protein on there. And hopefully we're going to use that as a platform to develop our hemp fiber and our hempcrete projects as well.
Okay. And people can buy direct from your website?
That's correct. Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks again for your time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you looking out to us, and I hope we can look forward to a very productive year in this hemp industry.
Josh Lidecker from Susquehanna Mills, an oilseed processor in Lycoming County. Special thanks today to Taylor Groff at Groff North America. If you want more information on their operation, you can email info@groffna.com. Okay, so my name is Eric Herlock. I'm the digital editor at Lancaster Farming Newspaper. And speaking of newspapers, why don't we check in with my editor, Steve Sieber, and see what's on tap for the paper this weekend.
Hello, this is Steve Sieber in the Lancaster Farming Newsroom.
Hey, Steve, it's Eric. You're on the podcast, and I'm curious what stories you're working on for the paper this week.
Oh, yeah. We have another busy week here. News editor Phil Gruber just covered a tobacco growers meeting at the Solanco Fairgrounds. They were discussing angular leaf spot and how to combat it. Also, Phil's out right now covering a Pennsylvania Farm Bureau meeting, so we'll see what he comes back with. And we had a visit in our area from Alexei Rotaru, who's a pastor from Moldova, a small country in Eastern Europe. He's teaching villagers how to vegetable garden, greenhouse production, raising rabbits and chickens and stuff like that. And Dick Warner, our staff reporter, is covering that.
Was there something about a group of hay farmers in Lycoming County?
Oh, yeah. There's a group of farmers up in Lycoming County. Like you said, they've pledged about 50 tons of hay to help farmers out in the Midwest who have been hit hard with the severe flooding out there. So we'll have a story on that.
All right. Well, thanks for the update, Steve.
Anytime. Have a good day.
All right. That was Steve Sieber, the editor at Lancaster Farming Newspaper. I am Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming Newspaper. If you have comments, questions, or concerns, please email me at podcast@lancasterfarming.com. I'm also looking for your stories of CBD success. So call me up and leave me a message, 717-721-4462. All right, until next time, see you in the newspaper. This episode of the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast is copyright 2019 by Lancaster Farming. Lancaster Farming is a part of the Steinman Communications family. Today's show was written and recorded, edited and produced by Eric Herlock, yours truly. And any music you hear is courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow.